Hey, big warm welcome if you're visiting with us today. Wonderful to have you with us. Today is going to be a little bit, you know, sometimes we do a mixture of things. Today is going to be a little bit more directed at those of us who call Village Church our home, or easily adaptable to those who call themselves Christians. So I do encourage you, if you're not quite there yet, where you wouldn't say you are a Christian, not sure what you believe, I still think there'll be something for you in understanding why Christians do what they do, why do we serve each other, why do we participate as a local church, and there's an opportunity as well. I encourage you to just keep coming along, because each week we do wrestle with different things about what it means to be a Christian and what the Bible says. Normally, we walk through books in the Bible. For instance, we're starting with Leviticus next week. Looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. But today, I really am, of all the weeks, not going to spend a huge long time unpacking any particular section, even Corinthians 2. I really am just jumping off one or two verses in the context that it's given, and we'll see how it goes. But I want you to imagine something with me. I want you to imagine if, you know, you've been following through from the last 2 weeks of our series, week one, hearing that Jesus has served us in the most profound way. He's washed us. He's not washed our feet. He has washed our soul. I want you to imagine that you took that on board. And week two, that we were made, we've been saved to have the mindset of servants, to serve others with our whole lives. That's how we glorify Jesus and actually bring joy to ourselves as well as Him. I want you to imagine, again, that you are just fully on board. That's how you see yourself, and that's your plan for the rest of your life. Now, what do you do next? What do you do next if you're like, okay, yes, I'm saying yes to all those things. Where do you start serving? How do you start? I just want you to kind of stare into the infinite vastness of the potential of that question, and, you know, perhaps be instantly overwhelmed. Philippians 2, Paul's gone to say, I want you, you know, I encourage you to have this Christ-like mindset, to be humble, servant minded people, just like Christ was. But what does that actually look like? What does it actually look like to do that, live that way? And there's, to be honest, there's two realities in life that really kind of force us to have to ask that question. One is your humanness. You are just limited. You have finite amounts of energy and time and so on. But then, of course, the other side of it, which is we live in a world of limitless need because of sin. And usually what I find is that this goes one of two ways. I'm sure it's pretty functioning okay. But either way, some of us, we try and do everything and quickly become overwhelmed, whereas others end up doing nothing because they just, in the face of so much need, what can I do? Parrot, one of the old world missionaries or something. You just have guilt because you don't end up doing anything. My hope for the whole series has been that we would serve lighter. And today it's that we would serve lighter because we actually have a framework, a way of thinking about how we make choices about how we serve, without feeling like we need to do everything. Now, I've tried to pack in as much as I can, to be honest, I failed with ignorance. And so we're going to miss heaps of stuff. We'll see how we go with your name. There's other opportunities. It's just, there's too much that the Bible says here. But how we serve, how do we continue to do that sustainably? That's what we're doing. Last 2 weeks, very much about the heart. Today's probably going to be a little bit more mind, guys. So I'm prepared for that. But there are two places I'm not going to go today which are actually extremely important, but I'm not going there because I've gone there semi-recently. So first of all, rest. Rest is crucial to the life of being a servant. Again, humanness, we need sleep, we need restoration. Do rest right and serving won't be as big of a burden, and you'll be able to live to serve it better. But I've spoken on rest in our Exodus series before from that long ago, so I encourage you to hunt down that. You can find that on Spotify. If you've got the handouts, I've put the way to search for that and find it. Another piece I'm not going to touch on today is giftings. At church camp, we covered giftings in talk three, and I reckon it is preferable. I reckon you'll serve better, longer, so on, if you're serving in the ways that are suited to your giftings, which, to be clear, is not just about skills that you have. Actually, everything you have is a gift from God, including your situation that you find yourself in, your personality, your experiences. All of those are gifts from God. And in our village, we always want to encourage people to serve fairly in line with their gifts, even as we go, what's going to be helpful or healthy for you, but also helpful for the village. Giftings can often spread across various ministries and so on. Again, go find those talks. I put them in the handouts. I'm not going to talk about it anymore today. But where are we going to go? Well, I reckon it might be a bit of a surprise for some of you. I mean, I've already flagged this about where we're going to end up. But I find that when I show people what the Bible actually says in this, it's kind of confronting. When I say things like Christians should serve others, I mean, where does your head go? Well, I'll tell you where mine goes first. It goes to the homeless. It goes to helping our homeless people. Goes to the poor. I mean, that should be the priority of Christian service, right? Christians should care about poor. I reckon that's certainly what a lot of people in our culture think. I was watching an old, ABC had a campaign, grilling a member of the Australian Christian Lobby, like a Mark Miles, about the whole Israel flower thing. I'm not interested in that bit. But watch this little clip. I think this captures what most Aussies would think Christians should be, their priority should be. Yeah, just play, mate.
Out the money that was invested by the Australian Christian Lobby in these full-page ads in very expensive daily papers. In the Bible, there are 3,000 references to poverty and alleviating poverty, and very few references to homosexuality. So why can't the ACL spend their capital, their time, their campaign resources on alleviating poverty in this country? Why can't we campaign for poverty?
All right. Hear the claps. Oh, we could have heard the claps, so definitely. Just worth noting, that's quite a fudge there. 3,000 references to the poor. Yes, sort of. Context always matters, doesn't it? Like, for instance, one of those references to the poor is Jesus saying, the poor you will always have with you. So, yes, but it's not there's not 3,000 references that say Christians should be remiss of the poor. And also worth noting as well, our quantity in the Bible doesn't always mean weight. If hell was mentioned more times in the Bible than heaven, does that mean hell's more heaven? Anyway, just to be a bit careful there, because I'll throw that in front of you, but I reckon that really captured how Aussies think that Christians should be serving. I reckon it actually captures how a lot of Christians, Aussie Christians, think Christian service should look like. Now, why is that? Why is it that for many of us we would have that perception? Is it because there are 3,000 references in the Bible? Or is it actually probably more likely because of this guy? Anyone know who that is? William Booth. He started the Salvation Army. The Salvation Army wasn't started as a charity for the poor. It was a missionary organization. This is the name, the Salvation Army. It was for spreading the good news about Jesus. He was a preacher. And through his evangelistic efforts, thousands of people became Christians. Primarily people who tended to be on poverty line. That's who he seemed to resonate most with. Now, eventually what happened was, as these people were becoming Christians, they were really having to wrestle. The Booths, he and his wife, they started a church because some of these people weren't fitting into normal church structures, and they called that church the Salvation Army, but with a mission to keep reaching more and more people about Jesus. But as they continued to do that, they encountered this issue of people struggling in their poverty. And I think in obedience to James 2:15-16, suppose a brother or sister is without clothes or daily food, if one of them says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? Okay, so there's something wrong there if you don't do that. So what they started doing, the Booths, they started a fundraise for their need, for the needs of these people who were getting saved, which, wonderful. Beautiful. But over time, something changed. It's changed in William Booth. And it changed in the Salvation Army. It started to become more about raising money to alleviate poverty than it did about preaching the gospel. And that's a trend that I would argue anyway has continued to the point where I don't think many people in our community would actually know that the Salvation Army is still a Christian organisation. And it is. And just to be doubly clear, let me just say that some very faithful Christians in Salvo. But I think it is fair to say that the shape of their mission, the centre of their mission, has changed. Now, is that just a classic case of mission creep, as happens often with organisations? Well, maybe. But I reckon there's a little more to it. Let me ask you this. That lady on Q&A, our community around us, what would they prefer Christians to be doing? What would they prefer Christian mission to be? Telling people about Jesus or caring for the poor? I reckon you know the answer. Social justice issues, as long as they're the right social justice issues, bro. Which I think is what happened probably for the Booths and for the Salvos. In the end, this is a hard reality of living in the world that we live in. Serving the poor can be really hard work, but you'll probably get a pat on the back for it. Preaching the gospel is also really hard work, but, you know, you'll get a proverbial slap in the face for that one. Now, maybe you're at that point where you're kind of like, yeah, I know where you're going. I see what you're saying. You want us to serve others by telling them about Jesus. That should be our focus. Now, I do want to be clear. I want you, I think Paul's message and the reason why it's there in Philippians 2 is that in light of what it looks like for Jesus to have served us, we're to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. I want us to see that Jesus cared not just whether you served and lived as a servant, but to think through how you served. I think that's what Paul's encouraging us towards. Serving not just however suits us or not just however suits our nation, but actually in a way that was directed by him. And I think it's very fair to say that Jesus' priority was for people to be saved. Jesus could have set up hospitals. He could have fed the poor. But he said that he has come to proclaim the good news, to see sinners saved through his death and resurrection. And so, yes, I think that should be our priority too. But I'm not going to spend heaps of time proving that to you. I'm just going to hope that we would be on board with that. Here's the interesting angle, I think, of today. How exactly does the New Testament tell us that we're supposed to serve others with the gospel? Now, for some of us who have been in churches for a time that outward focus, we want to see people hear about Jesus, you know, it's go out and tell them, right? Go out to your community, be on board, you know, engage with your neighbours and so on, tell them about Jesus, because what more better thing could you do? And I think there's something to that, that's true. But I reckon the New Testament actually has an interesting angle to this. What does it mean? How are we supposed to... What is the response of how we're supposed to serve? Let me show you this in a bunch of scriptures. I'm just going to rattle them off. Galatians 5:13. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. 1 John 3:16-17. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need and has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Hebrews 6:10, God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you've shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. Romans 12:13, share with the Lord's people who are in need, practice hospitality. John 13:34, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. 1 Peter 4:10, as each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's very grace. Now, did anyone notice the common denominator? Want to yell it out? One another. God's people. One another. Who are we to serve? Well, it's there in Philippians 2 as well. It's verse 5. Who are we to have a servant mindset towards? In what relationships? One another. Galatians 10, I think, really spells this out in the way that we're kind of looking for. Texts don't always do this, but here it is. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. Now, let me just put this together for you. I think the shape of the New Testament is that actually, when it comes to thinking about how are we to serve, the Christians need to have a priority towards serving other believers. Not for the exclusion of everyone else. Okay, it's Galatians 6:10. As we have opportunity, let's do good for people, but with a priority for serving one another, other believers. And let me take it a step further. I think when you take context into account, the writers of the New Testament have the local church in mind. Why couldn't it just be all believers, any other believers, you know? This is tricky because of the context of the Bible. The Bible isn't written in a Western kind of, modern context, right? Cars and Zoom meetings and these sort of things. In the Roman Empire, it's just not something that they would have had to engage with as a problem, because usually there is only one church in the city. So when it says to people like the Philippians, have this mindset towards one another, who's the one another that they're naturally going to think of? It's all the other Christians in their church. It's the only one another's that they know. There might be a random traveling missionary or Paul every now and then, but other than that, it's just the people in their church. So it wasn't really a question. When you get passages like Romans 12:13, share with the Lord's people who are in need, practice hospitality, who else are you going to share with? Hebrews 10:25, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, encouraging one another, all the more as you see the day approaching. It just would have been inconceivable for them to interpret that as meeting with other believers who are not from your church, because there weren't any that they could meet with. Which is why I think you don't get a lot of other texts that I can take you to go, for instance, so serve believers in your local church. They just didn't think that way because they didn't need to. That is a more of a modern problem. So I reckon I can say confidently, might not be there with me yet, that's okay. Is that we're actually to prioritise serving one another in a local church context. And I think there is an extra little piece to that, which would be, yes, and the poor amongst us, but that's extremely tricky in a welfare statement. Extremely tricky amongst us, Randy, to be honest. Please hear me well. I don't know all of your situations, but in terms of true poverty or real poverty, there's a reason why no one has asked me to come to our care fund from you. Okay, sorry if I missed you. Please let me know. I want to help you. And I think the principle actually is proximity. We are meant to take most responsibility for the people closest to us. What can I do for Christians at another local church in Tanzania? I can pray for sure. I can send some money for sure. But to be honest, I have no idea what to pray for other than their general. And I have no idea what they're going to use the money for, or whether it's a wise thing for me to send my money to them, generally speaking. Now, there will be exceptions to this. There are. And there is a place for overseas missions, for sending money overseas, absolutely. But I think, again, here not to the exclusion, just here priority. I think it makes sense to think locally. So, recap. We're to live as servants of Jesus, serving our local church, not to the exclusion of all else, but with a priority to other believers in the local church. Now, I wonder, I don't want to assume, I don't want to assume that that is a very confronting thing for us here today. But maybe it would be for some. Maybe it would be for some. Maybe some have been one for this a while ago. But I reckon it's worth asking, why is it confronting? And it could be confronting for a couple of reasons. I mean, I think the booths are actually one reason. I think the Salvation Army has had a profound effect in helping me about what Christian mission should look like, about caring for the poor. But I reckon there's other reasons too. Another reason might be because it just feels really exclusive, doesn't it? That's, you know, there's not many worse sins in our culture, but that idea of maybe you're visiting with us here today and you're like, ooh, you know, a group of people are just on about serving one another, that feels funny. That's just a knowledge that it does. But there's another interesting reason I reckon that some people, actually for a really good reason, might kind of push back against this. Maybe some of you think, well, hang on though, but serving people outside of a church, you know, people who aren't Christians yet particularly, isn't that the best way to reach people with Jesus? Isn't that what it means to be salt and light in our community? And therefore, shouldn't we be out there serving in our communities and so on? If we're just serving one another, won't that be actually detrimental? Won't that be bad for seeing more people one to Jesus? And where does that leave things like the non-Christian poor and so on? Are we just to leave them to themselves? That feels wrong. And it does, doesn't it? And look, I'll say again, I don't think we can. Not to the exclusion, but with a priority. And I think it is about, it's important to just realise this is about thinking through priorities. So being human is about making choices because our time, energy and money is limited. And I think what the New Testament is giving us is a framework, a way of seeing how we can make decisions in how we serve. And let me give you that framework kind of really spelled out now. What would we say is the greatest command of the New Testament? Or maybe several great commands of the New Testament. Overarching commands that everything else should kind of fit under. I think you know, most of you know. So Matthew 22, 36 to 39. A man asked Jesus this very question, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. First and greatest commandment. The second is like it. Love your neighbour as yourself. So love God and love people, right? There's the overarching command. But I think then under that, there is another one. What does it look like to love God and love people this side of the new creation? It's Matthew 28:19. Go and make disciples of all nations. Okay, so that's how we love God and love people, generally speaking. We go and make disciples of more people who love God and love people. But how do you go and make disciples? What's the shape of that? Now, people have been wrestling with that question for 2,000 years, trying to figure out the best way to do it. And obviously, there's little bits and pieces that are always going to be different. But what about if there was one kind of constant answer that was always true? What if it was, just like Jesus said in John 13, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. What if actually the most effective way to make more disciples was to be serving one another in the local church context? See how this works. It's a bit like bees. I used to have bees, and this is a very sore topic for Rosie. Everyone commiserated with her hives have died. My hive died a long time ago, sadly. And why did it die? It's because the hive was healthy. Now, even unhealthy hives will still send out bees to get pollen. But they'll bring it back, and the hive isn't able to deal with it. It doesn't help them much. Eventually, the hive will stop sending out bees because actually it's all hands on deck just trying to keep the hive alive. And eventually the hive dies. Now, one of the things I was really worried about personally when we first started Village was that it would actually take me away from reaching more people, telling more people about Jesus. Alita and I historically our kind of way of doing life was we would have lots and lots of people who weren't Christians into our lives, into our world, in the hope that we would be able to encourage them to check out Jesus. We think that's the best thing we can do. And I knew that planting would bring a change to that, because it would mean devoting far more time to actually catching up with a whole bunch of new guys who already believe in Jesus. Wonderful. Wonderful too. But I really wrestled, is that the right thing to do? Now, it's possible, I don't know, you know, I'm a God, I don't know, but just maybe, if we continued in the way that we were going, maybe we would have seen one or two of those people, or a family or two, actually become believers in our lifetime. But how many people have we seen follow Jesus through doing? Well, at the moment, it's about 14 so far. About 14 in 3 years. What if the most effective thing that we could do for our community hearing about Jesus is actually to contribute, to serve in our local church, to serve each other? And what about if even more? What if about if we are a strong hive, if you like? If we are a church that is healthy, that is encouraging, that is serving one another, that is pointing each other to Jesus, discipling one another, what if that was the best thing we could actually do for making more disciples? And what if that actually contributes to the whole picture, the overseas picture, the caring for the poor picture, all of it? You know, we're about to send off Ryan and Ella off to Bible college. Healthy church produces and sends out missionaries. I don't know where they'll be missionaries. It might be in Australia, it might be overseas, but either one. What if that's actually the key to the bits above, to making more disciples, to seeing more people love God and love people? And you see how many of you would have seen this at work. If you're at a church that doesn't love one another very well, that doesn't actually serve one another, do you want to go out and tell people about Jesus? Historically, I've been in a situation like that, and I found that it killed me. It killed my desire. Because I wasn't sure if I actually wanted to win anyone to the thing that I was experiencing. I certainly didn't want to bring them back to the church that I was experiencing. On the flip side, I've actually seen this in another way. I've seen them a bunch of times, people who aren't a part of a local church, but who are thoroughly convicted about telling people about Jesus. And they see some results, you know, they see some people believe, they see things happening, but then they get totally overwhelmed because it's all on them to disciple them, to see them, to encourage them. As George was saying, it's one of the great privileges we've seen of people have got a lot of questions as they come into Christianity, and rightly so. Takes time to work through these things. Takes time to work through the life change that often following Jesus is. If you're doing that without the support of a local church, we can't. We need help. We weren't meant to do it together. We weren't meant to do it alone. We're meant to do it together. So can we just grab that for a moment? What if the most loving thing that we could do for our community isn't providing them with food or clothes? It's providing them with the gospel, with the good news about Jesus, but actually the best way to do that is to have a church that loves one another, that serves one another, that is shining in its love for one another and walking for generations for us. Now, guys, I'm really aware that there's a whole bunch of other questions underneath those things. You know, where does family? Now, family's a big one, okay? For those of us with kids primarily, worth seeing that, generally speaking, serving your husband and your kids or your wife, sorry, is serving your local church. Sometimes we put them over the side. So there's family and then there's church. Hang on. Your family is part of your church. And who's the most local, closest proximity people to you? It's your family, it's those you've got direct responsibility for. So I'm not saying local church over your immediate family, I'm saying your immediate family is part of the local church. So wrestle with that. Think through that as part of your program in serving your local church. But maybe the other question you would ask is, hang on, you said at the start this is going to help us serve like. Sounds like I'm actually making it harder for you. Now, I can see how it maybe feels that way. But as I said, I reckon knowing your priorities actually helps you make decisions. I mean, imagine for a moment you were starting a new job tomorrow. And you get in there on your first day and your boss sets you up at your computer desk or whatever it might be, and they just say, go for it. And that was it. What do you mean, go for it? Where do I start? When you know the priorities, you can begin to make decisions in life. You can make decisions like, who should I pray for? Or even things like big stuff, like what jobs or careers should I pursue or say yes to? Or I know I'm supposed to be generous with my money, but where should I give it? I've got a few hours a week where I can volunteer. Where do I get those hours? I reckon God's given me the ability to cook. How should I use that gift? And I know that this is not sexy at all. Our community is not going to give us a pat on the back for getting this right. Well, I think eventually, hopefully, some will, because they'll be one to. But one of the things we've got to remember is that why are we serving? Is that why we're serving? Is it for pats on the back? Or is it because of Jesus? Is it because Jesus is our King and we want to see more people to be saved? What if this was the best way to do it? What if we could trust God? We need to trust God on this one. I want to tell you a little bit how this actually was lighter for me. I want to go before I was a pastor, okay? Sometimes hard to relate when someone's a pastor, okay? The whole job is just like, okay. But I was a high school teacher once, and I had thought this way for a long time, long before being a pastor. I served my family, raising them in the Lord. I would go off to work, working hard to earn a living as best I could to support them, but also support local church. I served in our local church, giving a few hours a week in various roles, but not to the exclusion of other things. I still coached a soccer team, serving not just one of my kids, but our local community in the way that I, you know, had some gift to be able to do. And I saw it as a good way of continuing to connect with people in our community. In terms of money, we thought through these priorities. We aim to give around 15% of our income. Most of that, probably about 12%. Went to our local church. Then we give 1% to overseas mission. We give 1% to church planning. We give 1% to compassion care. Something like that. Now, please, you take that how you want, but if there is any boast here, it is in the Lord, because I can tell you now, I am naturally an extremely selfish person. It is an extraordinary work of God, and I'm generous at all. But I just want to give you a picture of how this New Testament principle could work in practice. That you need to go away and work out your own salvation with Him. You need to work out what living according to these priorities, if you even agree with these priorities, for yourself. But it does lead me to ask you the question. What do you think? And how are you going at it? How are you going at serving people here at Good? In informal ways. Praying for people. Do you pray for other people here in Village? Do you check in with people in Village to see how they're going? Are you deliberately discipling someone else here in Village? Do you turn up to church to serve? Not again, informal, not just by packing up the chairs or whatever or anything like that, but just by being welcoming, by saying hello. By sitting down at dinner with people that you wouldn't ever sit down at dinner with every week. At Bible study, do you go so that you can just tell everyone else your problems? Now, you can, there's a space for that. There's a space in your Bible so you can share the things going on in life. But it's also so that you can serve others. Do you go to engage in the scriptures and encourage people by trying to wrestle with what God said? Do you listen to what's happening in the lives of others? Be a servant to your brothers and sisters here at Village so that we can be a healthy church that then naturally continues to reach out to its community. But of course, not just in informal ways. Guys, we desperately need people to serve in formal roles. We need people to help out with the setup and pack up. We need kids leaders. We need people to play music. or cooked in. Because all of this is what contributes to us being that earthen pot that's able to keep sending out, wants to send out and draw back in. Are you part of a team that serves? Now, can I be very careful? There are some amongst us who there's a reason why you might not be. Some of you are recovering from really bad experiences in serving the church. Some of you, it's just your context that makes it almost impossible. Please, you need to work that out for yourself. But for some of us, you could be taking on some of these roles and contributing. Are you able to do that? Guys, there's many places I could touch on. I'm aware that I've left out a lot of life. There was an alternate sermon that tried to cover all of them. It got very long. What do we do with unbelieving? What do we do? How does our vocational work fit into this? How does social justice and so on, how do they fit into this situation? Guys, if there is one that is particularly burning in you, happy to do it, at least one or two in Q&A. I'll cover anything else that I can in Living Grounded. But let me finish by way of reinforcing. Change feels hard. Thinking and making decisions feels hard. There is something that is easier about just kind of following your path on anything. But I also find it's like spending money in life. You live that way, just spending money on whatever your heart kind of cries out to you. And one day you look back and you wish you'd done it different. You wish you'd done it different. God has given us one life. He's given us everything we have so that you can love him and love people, so that you can make disciples. He's given us a shape of what that should look like. Serving one another in the local church. Not for the exclusion, but as the priority. What might that look like for you? I encourage you to work that out. How about I pray that we would? Heavenly Father, Lord, I'm so thankful that you know the people that are here far better than I do. You know our hang-ups, you know our biases, you know our wrestles, you know our contexts. God, I just pray that you would be at work in each one of us, that you would help. If I've unpacked your scriptures fairly, then I pray that you would help us to be one to that and to desire to honour and to serve Jesus our King in the way that he suggests that we should. Lord, I pray that you would help us to not just see that on a kind of abstract scale, but to look at our own lives and to wrestle with what would it look like to shift our priorities in these ways. Would you help us to wrestle with what we do with the life that you've given us, with all the aspects of the life that you've given us? And would you help us to wrestle with that together, that we might encourage each other to serve one another in an even greater way, that would lead to more people loving God and loving people. In Jesus' name, amen.